quickly, Alina. You held a clinic on Monday. Mm-hmm. How many people turned out?
We had almost 700 people come to our teach-in.
Did you expect this?
You know, it was hard to know what to expect. Fear is running rampant throughout our communities, and we wanted to turn that fear into action.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. Hilarion Joseph, detained 3 years, now a U.S. citizen, served in the Gulf War. Alina Das, lawyer and professor at NYU Law School's Immigrants' Rights Clinic. That does it for our broadcast. Join us next Monday, December 5th at Riverside Church for Democracy Now!'s 20th anniversary celebration here in New York. Among those there will be Harry Belafonte, Noam Chomsky, Patti Smith, Danny DeVito, Danny Glover, Tom Morello, Juan Gonzalez, and many, many more. Visit democracynow.org for details. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford College. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, our public affairs show. We cover news in the local area and a variety of opinions, too, about the news. Thank you for being with us. Today is December the 2nd. Oh, my goodness, it's December already in Dearborn. And we have 23 days left till Christmas, so don't go too crazy out there shopping. Let your fingers do the walking on your smartphone or something if you can do that. Some crazy people are driving around these shopping lots. I'll tell you, just be careful. Some of them, you know, may have not been out since last Christmas driving, and or maybe they're trying to find a new store or something. So you have to give everybody as much courtesy as you can manage and try to not be running late yourself for anything, which I was today, by the way, coming into the station. So hopefully... John Conroy, my name is Jay Koronek. I didn't introduce myself first, of course, with no humility at all. I'm the host of the show, but also station advisor at WHFR-FM, the station to which you are listening. And John Conroy is here to keep me going straight and to pick up on the details that I missed. John is our WHFR news director right now. So the top good news story of the week is, John, from last Wednesday.
Hello, Jay. How are you doing today?
Okay.
The top news story from Wednesday is
sports.
Oh, sports. Okay.
Sports, John.
We're talking sports. Thank you, Jay. All right. Yeah. Our basketball team, the Hawks, won our second game of the season against Glen Oaks Community College out of Constantine area in Michigan, the western side of the state. We won by 10 points. And then tomorrow we have a game at 1 o'clock with a team from. I'm not even sure what their team is from yet, but we got a game tomorrow, 1 o'clock.
You just gave me a copy of the schedule.
I gave your schedule. Yep. I got it. Never mind. I got okay. Kalamazoo Valley Community College at 1 o'clock.
Oh boy!
Come one, come all to support your Hawks.
Okay. And we're sorry to say that somebody said, well, what about the women's team, the Hawkettes? Apparently, either because of funding or lack of volunteer sports people, they couldn't do the women's team this year. But they always make an effort to have both male and female teams competing. And I'm not sure what the full story is there. But nonetheless, the men's game is a go.
Yes. The Lady Hawks did have a volleyball season. And so the athletic director, Rochelle Taylor, decided that they could do one sport, one gender at a time, essentially, is what's happening.
Good. Okay.
The one sport that is starting to make waves, no pun intended for WHFR, but we also have a wrestling club that's beginning, that has been competing. And it looks like in the next year or maybe less, we will be an intercollegiate varsity sport in wrestling as well.
Hmm. That's very impressive, John.
So, I think so.
Were you ever out for sports in high school?
Oh, certainly. Yep.
Oh, yeah? What were your sports?
Played baseball, a little bit of baseball, and a little bit of basketball.
Okay. Yeah. I was out for junior varsity, I guess, in basketball because I was 6'1". And they figured, well, if he's closer to the basket, he's probably going to have a higher percentage of scores, you know, but make more baskets.
Yep.
That wasn't the case. So I dropped out of that team. And then I joined up on track team in high school, and I ran the mile race because I wasn't fast enough for the quarter mile and I couldn't get my long legs. And said, well, you should run hurdles with your long legs. Yeah, but I got to get them off the ground to get over the hurdles. And I wasn't too good at that. So I kept getting tangled in the hurdles and falling down. So that wasn't good. And then...
So you became a distance man. That's
right.
What
it was embarrassing, though, because sometimes for the mile race, the coach, just for exercise, would have his quarter mile and his hurdlers just run it anyway. You know, there wasn't a limit on how many, I guess, in high school you could actually put out there to run the mile race. And I was embarrassed because most of the other team for a mile ran faster than I could. But I made that, you know, I made the try, and it was a learning experience, and it's something I'm not going to do again, certainly. But
well, the fact that you competed, Jay, is a good thing. I believe.
Yeah.
And I was a pitcher in baseball, and in basketball I was kind of a guy that stood in the middle of the underneath the basket, knocking people off as they were coming by to get rebounds.
Yeah. Just a recommendation, too, and John will sneak in sports reports several times a week. I know on Wednesdays after the game you slid in this week and might continue that in the future. And it is a fun thing to do if you're in Dearborn area. You know, when we're having a game here, you don't have to have a student who's a student here at the college in order to come to the game. And it's a lot more fun, perhaps, than one of the big arenas because you can get up close right to the game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, front row seat pretty much for all the people. It's just, a bleacher, and it's right there next to the the wood and the wood floor. And so it can get pretty exciting. And it's not too expensive. How much do they charge?
Very inexpensive.
A couple bucks?
Maybe $5 for non-students, but students are admitted free.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Well, and it's a fun time to be had by all. And we do have that schedule, John.
Yep.
I did find it in our... in our notebook here for our DJ. So the next home game is Kalamazoo Valley tomorrow at 1 p.m. That's on the main campus of Henry Ford College, 5101 Evergreen. And guess what building it's in? The Physical Education Building, but also known as the HFC Memorial Gym. Mm-hmm. But they don't put down the letter. Do you know the letter that's on the side of the building? It's something. I wonder if it's A or B or... Well, we'll get back to you on that, folks. You can't just ask, where's the game, you know?
It's Building H.
H, okay, yep. For have fun, okay. Or for something like that, okay. We'll get back to you there. All right. Well, we're looking at a couple of news items that do affect Dearborn and the surrounding area. One, I have... online right now. It's an editorial opinion written by our Dearborn Fire Chief, James Murray, and I think it's self-explanatory. He goes into great detail here, so maybe I may summarize some of this for you. But Dearborn Fire Chief James Murray refers to the opinion column by Regan Ford, published in the November 27th Press and Guide, which we didn't cover last week on this show, by the way. Anyway, I think you'll see what Reagan's comments were because Chief Murray is trying to respond to those. So, and this is about the Consolidated Dispatch Center project undertaken by the City of Dearborn, which would also include other nearby communities, at least Melvindale, anyway. And I haven't, I don't see... other communities mentioned here. But anyway, other communities, including Melvindale. Okay, that's what the chief says. And he claims that Regan Ford's opinion column contained numerous incorrect and careless statements. Ooh. So here's what he had to say. Chief Murray says, because this project will enable us to provide better public safety services, I felt compelled to set the record straight. In light of the divisive national election we have just experienced, I also felt it was important to take a stand against the practice of misleading public opinion to hopefully stop it from becoming a commonplace tactic when debating important local issues. Contrary to what Mr. Ford would have you believe, the Consolidated Dispatch Center project, along with the enhancement of radio communications, is being completed after years of thorough research, negotiations with other communities, including Melvindale, and the pursuit of state grant money to cover a significant portion of the cost. It is in line with the directive for municipalities to share services when they can be even more effective for all residents involved and to use tax dollars in a more efficient way. All agreements have been approved in meetings open to the public and have followed all laws, including those that govern potential conflicts of interests. Projects of this scope, he goes on to say, and impact take years to develop and implement because they require taking careful and well-informed steps. The project actually began late in 2012 when the mayor, that's Mayor O'Reilly, the Dearborn Police Chief, Chief Hadid, and I determined that Dearborn should switch from its current system that operates on a 400 megahertz frequency to an 800 megahertz radio system. This determination was made after a long and thorough vetting of multiple 800 megahertz systems, which included the Michigan State Police system and the Downriver Mutual Aid system. Dearborn had not converted to 800 megahertz earlier because of a number of well-documented transmission challenges within the state of Michigan, commonly known in public safety circles. By the way, where is 800 megahertz in terms of broadcasting? Well, WHFR broadcasts at 89.3 megahertz, and that's on the FM dial. And you probably know the FM dial only goes to about 107, 108, I think, is the top of the dial, something like that. Yep.
Sounds right.
Yeah. And so 800 is like 700 more. Of course, even 400 megahertz is 300 megahertz, a big difference from the FM dial. But all the frequencies are used by one service or the other. It's all regulated by the Federal Communications Commission. They assign frequencies either above or below FM or AM broadcast frequencies so that they don't interfere with one another. Okay. So anyway, they thought that the 800 was better. And certainly, if they can directly talk to the state police, maybe that's a good idea anyway. They're looking for better safety procedures and better equipment to implement those. The second part of the project was to research and explore opportunities with two neighboring communities, Dearborn Heights and Melvindale, to consolidate dispatch services. This project provided the potential for improved technologies, increased staffing, enhanced training opportunities, and more efficient cost model. The regionalization of dispatch services has been successful in many communities throughout the United States, given technology improvements, including geographic information, GIS, and computer-aided dispatch, CAD, systems. It was determined that 2013 would be a good time to review dispatch processes to see if a consolidation would be beneficial to all parties involved. The city of Dearborn and its potential partners applied to the state of Michigan for a grant for this consolidated dispatch center, and despite a highly competitive environment with applications submitted by many communities, Dearborn was awarded $3.5 million. It's one of the largest grants ever awarded from the state's Community Grant Assistance Program. The state approved the grant because of the potential success for improved services with more economic efficiencies. Each of the three communities provided letters of support, and each of the communities involved were equally instrumental in obtaining these funds. And he says, concluding that paragraph, that's important. John, you may remember we did a story that some Dearborn Heights residents weren't so sure. They had several community meetings over the last year in which they were suspicious of not having dispatch services for their emergency teams originate in their city.
Right.
But so it has been discussed anyway, technically, it looks like the city of Melvindale and the city of Dearborn Heights have letters of agreement. I would assume you would do that, and then after the money is available, then you'd make it final. I don't know if it's final. No, I don't think that is. Anyway, the new service, is estimated to cost $750,000, which is significantly less than the $2.2 million Dearborn is receiving from the state grant for radio updates. Murray goes on to say, I can't overstate another benefit of Dearborn having a radio system that will permit us to better communicate with other communities. This is known as interoperability. Threats from crime, fire, and medical emergencies don't recognize city borders. Often Dearborn police and firefighters work with their counterparts in Dearborn Heights and Melvindale to respond to these emergencies. Okay, I have to do an aside here. What frequency is the Detroit Police Department on? That's a rhetorical question, okay. John. I'm not saying you would know. I'm looking right at Johnny. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. No, but I'm just saying, well, they're a pretty big police department. That's one of our main borders, mm-hmm. okay, of the city of Dearborn. And so anyway, maybe, I don't know. I don't know what's going on there, but that would be a good idea too. In fact, a whole regional area grant would be a better idea. They usually are, except the regional idea for rapid transit went down to defeat in terms of funding from our voters. But usually regional ideas are a lot better, just like how we've somewhat pretty much regionalized the water system in Detroit. There, at least that there is a control board now representing a tri-county area, at least, that's making decisions for that.
Well, we don't have an exact combination of dispatching as a service, but there recently, this past Wednesday, there was a big fire in Trenton that burned down a couple of businesses, including one of my favorite restaurants called the Herb Garden. Hmm. And within very few minutes, Groseal, Woodhaven, Trenton were all right there at the fire. There was much cooperation with those three towns to get that fire taken care of.
Yeah, it would seem like if the initial reports were accurate about the seriousness of the problem, that the fire department or the police department, they would make calls really quick to the other police departments or fire departments for assistance right at the beginning.
Yep,
but sometimes you don't know until you get to the call and say, oh my gosh, I didn't know it was spreading to the other buildings or something. Let's call in the other departments. We need more machines, you know.
it's a mini mall right there. So that
I see.
There were a whole number of stores that could have gone down but didn't because mm-hmm. Of the quick response, you know.
So Mr. Murray goes on, Chief Murray goes on to conclude about this. Well, first of all, he says, I don't want to skip this paragraph. Finally, there was no conflict of interest when the Melvindale City Council voted publicly to participate in the Consolidated Dispatch Center. A Melvindale City Council member is an employee of the Dearborn Fire Department. However, before the vote, the City of Melvindale's legal counsel was asked to determine if the Melvindale City Charter prohibited this council member from voting on the issue. He determined it did not. That's because by state law, the Consolidated Dispatch Center does not fall under the fire department's authority. I'm sorry, Chief Murray, that legal opinion is their legal opinion, but it sure does smell fishy to me. I don't know why that council member, if it was such a great idea, wouldn't recuse himself.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like it would benefit him, or it's to the interest of the Dearborn Fire Department. And as far as I remember, he voted for it, so although it was a pretty much... I think maybe there was one dissenting vote. I don't remember the Melvindale vote, but it was pretty large majority. But excuse me, if just because the legal counsel for the city of Melvindale said that technically, just crazy. It obviously is a conflict of interest. Anybody can see that. Anybody in their right mind would know that. Why couldn't they just do this without legal counsel? For Pete's sake, elected officials should have a higher standard. I know, who knows what's going to happen in the next presidential administration, yeah. But there should be a higher standard of activity. And if there is a conflict of interest, even distantly possible, they should recuse themselves. Of course, I hate to mention specific names, but I won't. Our new president-elect, whoever that is, happens, I know, to have investments worldwide, businesses worldwide that he makes profits from in many, many countries. Isn't that a conflict of interest if he has to make a decision about either going to war or adding additional aid support to one country or the other? Of course, as president, maybe he doesn't have to make the proposal himself. He just has to say yes or no to proposals that come from other people, which might be some kind of so-called firewall protection from conflict of interest. But it's a big problem nationally, that whole question of conflict of interest, because some people have a conflict of interest they don't even realize it themselves. I mean, they say, I can be fair about this, but can they really, if they're going to benefit or their job or their business is going to benefit from how they vote? It's got to be somewhere in their deep subconscious. You know, I mean, it's got to, emotionally, they know it's going to benefit them on some level. And that's why conflict of interest has to be very, very strictly followed. And it wouldn't have made, I don't think, any difference in that vote. So
no, but even if you move those interests into, say, your children's names, you're still going to be thinking and being concerned about those businesses as long as you develop them like you did, you know.
Well, that's actually based, you know, the legality of it is that simply like making your children the CEO or something, that doesn't cut you off enough. That's not a good enough firewall or whatever they call it. I mean, that I know that to be true nationally, and they've told Trump that, but he's got some plan that he's going to announce in 2 weeks about exactly how he's going to handle that. And so he does have some legal advisors now. Yeah. And he has pointed out something about the fact that there is no law talking about conflict of interest for the president. That may or may not be true, because a lot of things he said have not been true. I'm sorry, folks. A lot of politicians say things that aren't true, but Donald Trump has said more things that have been untrue, 70 or 80% of what he said in his speeches, by fact-check groups, not by liberal groups, has been false. And, in fact, he's even admitted today when he's making a speech about the carrier jobs, which we might touch on briefly, because it relates to Ford moving jobs to Mexico, which didn't happen, wasn't going to happen, and Trump didn't have any influence in it, despite a press release that went out last week. He actually said that, I was using, when I said certain things in the speech, I was, he didn't say exaggerating, but I was just giving an example. It was a metaphor. Does he know what a metaphor is? I'm sorry, that's a terrible slam. But he said something like that. It was a grandiose example. He didn't really mean it specifically. Well, if you didn't mean it specifically, why did you say it so specifically? I'm sorry, I just can't respect someone that goes around that way. But, you know, a lot of his supporters actually believed what he said, like building a wall between U.S. and Mexico. And he's already said on national TV, well, you know, a wall, a fence, and will Mexico pay for it? No, they won't pay for it. Why? Because they said they wouldn't pay for it. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, so let's finish the statement from James Murray, the fire department chief, speaking for the city of Dearborn, I'm sure, and the mayor's office, too. So he says, after the state law thing about conflict of interest, in addition, I resent Mr. Ford's completely unfounded implication that I, as fire chief, somehow place pressure on this Melvindale council member to vote for the consolidated dispatch project. I don't think, even if Mr. Ford did say that, and I did read his opinion, but I don't have it in front of me, so I'm not sure how he phrased that. But I've just got done saying that conflict of interest can even be, if it's to your benefit in some way, or to the benefit of your friends, even if you're not conscious of voting because your friends ask you to, you subconsciously, emotionally might vote in favor of that because they were your friends or they're your employers. And so can you blame somebody for what's unconscious? Yes, you can, because we can remove that element by getting people who have potential conflict of interest not involved in the process. So that's my editorial comment. Of course, all opinions on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College. Remember that. And we only express the different ideas so that you can do some further research maybe on your own and think it through. You know, don't believe anything you hear on radio or TV and then act on that alone. Okay, gotta look elsewhere. Like in response to Chief Murray's comment here, go back on Press and Guide. And I'm on Press and Guide, and his November 27th opinion isn't there. His November 22nd, Regan Ford's opinion, from November 22nd about Christianity and the holidays is there, but I couldn't find this other opinion. Maybe it's buried there somewhere. Anyway, it should be noted, Mr. Murray says that Mr. Ford has never questioned Police Chief Ronald Haddad or me directly about this project, despite the fact we've attended many of the same meetings and have consistently stated we would be happy to share information at any time. More troubling, however, is his decision to manipulate facts to attempt to mislead people. We must rise above petty politics, especially when making decisions about critical public safety issues. Doing anything less constitutes a disservice to our community. Okay. Well, I would say it's kind of the place of professional reporters to dig into this information. And I do thank Mr. Ford, who has been on the show,
yes,
my co-host in the sort of in the post-election show that we did after November 8th. But I'm just saying, who else is going to ask these questions? I mean, unless you're a full-time reporter supposedly gathering facts, then you would go and spend time scheduling and sitting down with Police Chief Ron Haddad and Fire Chief Murray and maybe the mayor and maybe the head of the city council. And then you would also interview the people in Melvindale, and you'd interview that person who is the member of the Dearborn. You know, you would get everybody interviewed if you were a good reporter and get the facts. But in lieu of that, what we have are some citizen reporters who have attended an awful lot of meetings, and maybe there's things going on outside of meetings, but we don't even have a reporter for the Press and Guide or the News Herald that goes regularly to the city council meetings, much less the committee meetings. We have only one part-time reporter, Katie Hedrick, who is continuing, even though she works for the city of Dearborn, she continues to attend the Dearborn Board of Education meetings and writes up the stories in her very professional, detailed way, giving quotes and getting background and so on. So at least we have, that's the last professional coverage we have, and yet she's being paid a very part-time fee for that. Luckily, she's got the background because she's done the so-called education beat in Dearborn, I think for at least 10 years. So she knows the people involved, she knows the way that they work, she knows the system. So she doesn't have to do a lot of additional research other than going to their 3 or 4 hour meetings, which are sometimes very tough to sit through. I've sat through a couple myself and had trouble staying awake. No disrespect to the Board of Education or any of the administrators, but the topics have to come up and they have to be discussed, like budget issues and so on. Most of the time, there's no edge. It's just business, and it just has to be listened to and then passed. And it's nothing controversial. But nonetheless, I don't personally think Mr. Ford is to blame for his opinion, since he did attend many meetings. No, he was not a professional reporter to get all the facts from all sides. But, we respect him and his opinion, as I hope some of our listeners respect the opinion of John and myself, too, on this. So I'm just trying to give some balance to that. I think Mr. Murray's statement, I'm sorry to say, Chief Murray, and we've never, I might have had you on the show once, and I'm sorry I don't remember. It was a while ago if it was. But this is way over the top. I mean, I know you were upset when it looked like your reputation and your decisions were being directly disputed. I think your wording is overly strong and very emotional. And I think Mr. Ford is welcome to his opinion. He has some information there, some of which I agree, like the conflict of interest issue. No matter what you say is the objective case. I'm sorry. That's how I see it. There is a problem in Dearborn that Mr. Ford talked about, and that is that we have a new administrative center that has a lot of empty space. And it would be nice to, in order to help pay the bills, is that if we could use that constructively. Of course, the city of Dearborn, was hoping that maybe the Dearborn Board of Ed, whose Tenide Center was falling to pieces, their main administrative center was in terrible disarray, that building, and they thought, well, maybe they will come on in and take one of the floors, and pay us a little rent, but it would be a lot cheaper for them, and so on. Not that we need communication with them on a daily basis. Two separate entities, no legal connection, believe it or not, between the two. Although we always get somebody running for Dearborn City Council who says, I'm going to change the schools. And I always have to point out to them on the air in the show, in the middle of their interview, that you don't have any legal authority.
No.
It's a separate legal entity. Oh, you can talk to them. Anybody can talk to anybody, you know. But, you know, he's got no legal authority to say he's going to change this or that about the schools. The city council, city government is separate from the education system in Dearborn. Oh, well. So this would make use of free space, and it would be close in contact with city government. I don't know if they would get rent from anyone. You know, obviously, if we serve as a call center, City of Melvindale and Dearborn Heights, it seems like they would be paying us a service fee because they don't have to do it for themselves. So part of their budget, they would be giving us money each month for running their dispatch. I mean, it would be a collective dispatch, but everybody sort of chips in, and that would help to pay for some of the rent with the outside money coming in. Again, it's not rent. We own the building, but does the City of Dearborn pay property taxes on city-owned property? There's an interesting question. I wonder if they're excluded. Anyway, but they have bills. You know, they have heating, cooling, and all that, and so on. And if the roof starts to leak, the people on the second floor get it first, and the city government on the first floor, they don't have to worry that much. So.
Takes time to get down there.
Yeah. The people on the second floor will get out their buckets, you know, and then it won't leak through to the first floor.
Okay.
Now there's nobody to put buckets there, so when it leaks,
it just comes right down. Yeah. I got you.
No, I'm sure they check that frequently, and that wouldn't happen. By the way, the Dearborn Board of Ed, you say, well, their Tenike is falling apart. No, they have dedicated a large amount of money from the last couple of millages to improve it. And now they even say, although it's not decided yet, what they'll do with the additional $2.5 million that they're getting from the Regional Transit Authority millage that passed for all of Wayne County, but it's going to be split up and Dearborn will get about $2.5 million. One of the ideas that they was expressed was that they would further fix the Tenike building. Although 3 or 4 years ago or 5 years ago when this first came up, it sounded like there's no way to economically fix the building. You'd have to tear the whole sucker down and start over again. That would be the only way to really somehow meet the problem. Excuse me. The other big story. Oh, my God. Halfway through the hour, you're listening to the new WHFR Journal with Jay Koronek and John Conroy from WHFR.FM, the station making waves. John heard this on the radio. It was WDET news, I believe,
yep.
Right? This is about why the former Dearborn City Clerk, that's Kathy Buda, is under investigation for embezzlement. And this was revealed. I got the printed story in front of me from ArabAmericanNews.com, the printed paper and the website here in Dearborn that covers national news, but international news too, but also the city of Dearborn pretty well. And additional information, and I'm not going to read the whole story, but is that actually she, not just her office, is suspected of embezzlement, and that means she was taking money, cash, in fact, out of the coffers of various collection spots in the city clerk's office that she was supposedly, and she's not been charged, this is just alleged, this is the reason for the investigation, which is not completed yet, so I don't think we can go any further on that, but she is retired now, but what I wanted to bring up was something, and you can read the complete story in the Arab American News print edition that's coming out this weekend, maybe out later today somewhere in Dearborn. It's free, by the way, good price. The problem was her retirement and the additional money that was voted to her. And let me just read the end of the article. For about 8 months following the bust, as they call it, that is the collection of the documents from the city clerk's office, little the case had been publicly raised by city officials until Dearborn City Council members disputed over Buddha's salary adjustments. A resolution was raised in an August 16th council meeting by Councilman Thomas Tefelski and Robert Abraham to set aside and authorize $11,300 from the city's budget to compensate Buddha for sick and leave days. Abraham later said that he believed that Buddha had, quote, not done anything except retire in good standing, unquote. He added he believed the clerk was eligible for a pension, which multiplies the amount of the mentioned benefits. Councilman Mike Cerini objected to paying thousands to a city clerk under investigation, calling the proposal, quote, borderline insulting, unquote. In light of what is going on, this is another quote from Cerini, in light of what is going on regarding embezzlement of taxpayer funds, until this investigation is completed, I do not see how we can authorize this. Cerini added, while the appropriation is legal, it could be up to the council's discretion to approve granting the accumulated benefits. HR Director Pepper, Cynthia Pepper, is the name of our human resources director in Dearborn, responded by saying that city employees are contractually entitled to time off and other earned benefits when they retire. According to the Michigan Public Employee Retirement Benefits Forfeiture Act, if a public employee is convicted or enters a no-contest plea in court due to a felony or a breach of public trust during their service, their retirement benefits and other benefits should be forfeited. So that's the pension as well as these extra little side add-ons. All council members, including Mayor O'Reilly, concluded that Buddha is entitled to the benefits, especially because the investigation is ongoing and there's been no proof of guilt. And it was a vote of 6-1 passed to compensate Buddha. City Attorney Walling, that's Deborah Walling, said if Buddha is charged and convicted for embezzlement of tax dollars, the city would seek to restore the funds. A spokesperson for the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office told the Arab American News that there is an, quote, an active search warrant, unquote, and they are currently investigating the embezzlement case. But that's the details there. There's a few suppositions from some people they interviewed for the story, which, you know, is either true or false. I mean, it'd be part of the complete case later if there was a case, but certainly the investigation is trying to find out the facts there. And so not the city would probably reclaim any benefits they paid if all these charges were proven against Kathy Buddha. And that's, you know, she hasn't even been officially charged yet, much less convicted. So let's get that straight. So, but that is interesting that some of these details have come out. And I think it was probably first in Arab American News. I'm not sure where all of it came from, but they did a great job of trying to interview a lot of people like a professional journalist would do,
yeah,
you know, to keep the ideas flowing around out there. Okay.
And she's retired, you said, Jay.
Yeah, she already has retired. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was, let me get the facts straight on that. It was on December 16th. That the Michigan State Police investigators obtained a warrant and seized several boxes of documents and other property from Buddha's office on suspicion that she was stealing residents' money. But then Buddha, then in her fifth term, announced her retirement on January 19th. So that was a month later, citing the stress of upcoming elections, having worked as the city clerk for 21 years. And she is, you know, in that retirement age, you know, right. 65, pretty traditional time to, and so on. But you know, if these charges come up, she can't, just because she retired, she can't escape that. I mean, one punishment could be just, oh my gosh, losing all of her pension.
But this was a year ago, 2016, when she retired?
Earlier this year.
Earlier this year, I mean.
Yeah. It was December last year when the investigation began.
Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, let's see what else we have here. Oh my goodness. Well, we were talking about, and I'm off mic, as they say. Here I come back again. So many papers spread out in front of me here. There is a vote question that was in the News Herald about the vote total in a school board race in Taylor. And this is just to show you how crazy elections are. Yes, there's a recount that may go ahead in Michigan for the presidential numbers, but that's being challenged now by Republicans in the state to the Michigan Supreme Court, which the majority of whom were elected by Republican money. Therefore, we assume they are Republican sympathizer judges. So, I mean, one of the charges is that Jill Stein is not the victimized party because she has no chance by a recount of being found to be president.
Right. She was in fourth place of the right. of the folks that were running.
So. That's right. Yeah. So, but it doesn't say anywhere in Michigan law that anybody can't ask for a recount. I mean, certainly, maybe you have to be a candidate, but she was a candidate. So it doesn't specifically say. Now, they say it's going to cost the state a lot of money to do this, although a lot of people in city clerk's offices, because they have to recount 4.8 million votes by hand.
Yes.
Well, there's other ways of doing it, but that's the most accurate way. And according to the people in the state who do that and talking to the city clerks around the state, that can be completed in 2 weeks. They can sit down and do it. So I don't know what the additional costs are, overtime pay or something, but it's people who already are employed. Maybe they have to hire some more people. But they've already, in the several states, three states where Jill Stein has put this recount request, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, these other states have already upped the amount that they originally stated that a recount would cost, that she's going to have to pay. And so she has continually had to go back on the internet asking for more money from her supporters. But she now has over $8 million, where originally it was only going to cost about $3 million, according to what the states told her, if a recount was asked for. So it's kind of interesting. How come the states are charging more and more as they get into this and what they said originally? Because they can, I guess. I don't know.
They're allowed to.
They're allowed to, right. are they going to bring in some lawyers that cost $500 an hour to oversee it that they never would have called in before just to raise the cost because they think maybe Jill Stein can't afford the extra money? Again, it's not Jill's money. It's 140,000 contributors from around the country, including small contributors that actually raise that $8 million.
More lawyers getting rich? Maybe that's when, what part of that.
I don't know. We'll have to follow it to see. But, and there could be a ruling pretty soon about whether or not the recount will go ahead in Michigan.
Well, I heard a little bit on Rush Limbaugh's show coming in, too, about Wisconsin showing a difference of one vote from the recall rates.
Again, what one vote? You mean
In the electrical. In electoral, to make the electoral college change.
Well, of course. I mean, you could win the Electoral College, that is the presidency, by one vote there.
Yep.
That's true.
Yep.
Yeah, you don't need any more than that. But because they're still counting in the whole United States of America, all across the U.S., they're still counting absentee ballots. Yes, they are. And write-in ballots. And now Hillary Clinton's lead is over 2.5 million votes nationally. Now, that's still only a couple percent, but she is... This is the first time in history there's been such a discrepancy between the popular vote and the electoral vote.
Yep.
So, and they keep finding things like this Taylor. And it's not an example that is, it's just one case. It's not an example of anything else. Okay, but here's a story, just because it is crazy. But vote totals, question in Taylor school board race, legal action pending, lawsuit will likely be filed. Ron Miller has spent almost 4 years as a member of the Taylor Board of Education. He decided after the filing deadline for the election to run for a second term and declared himself a write-in candidate. When the vote totals were in on November 8th, he thought he had won, but had to wait until November 23rd for Wayne County to release the official results. Officially, he had 247 votes and finished second behind David Myers, who would take his first public office if the results stand. The issue Miller found when looking through precinct-by-precinct results, however, is that 9 precincts showed 0 votes for any of the write-in candidates, which would include himself. And here's a quote from Miller, "I was told by county election workers that there were no write-in votes in those precincts," unquote. Miller said he knows that isn't the case, though, because one of the precincts showing no votes is his own, and he knows he voted for himself as a write-in candidate, at the very least. Okay? So they were lying to him about that, or they didn't count right somehow. Miller, and they thought they weren't lying, but they might and it might have been an error in the counting. Miller said he started asking official questions about the vote totals on November 26. He started to file an official protest November 27th after speaking with city and county officials the previous day. Quote, the results weren't posted online until after 3 p.m. Wednesday, Miller said. The state law said I had 6 days to protest, but when I tried to file a protest Tuesday, I was told the deadline had passed, unquote. Miller said the issue with that is county offices were closed on Thanksgiving and the Friday after, both days of the weekend, and the results weren't available until very late in the day on Wednesday. On top of that, he started asking questions and for an investigation on Monday. I've dealt with a lot of contracts, he said. Unless it explicitly states calendar days, it means business days. Six business days. The story just concludes with a couple more ideas here. A representative for the county clerk's office said they didn't have answers to several questions the News Herald asked. A reporter. The News Herald was asking questions, God bless him, by the deadline for this report, for this story. And when was the story filed? Okay. Just, it says updated 10 minutes ago from this morning. So 10:20 a.m. this morning, December 2nd. Okay, so that's the update, updated story here. And that was, it's probably the fact that the clerk got back to the reporter and said, didn't get back to them before they posted this. And they said, well, they also said there was nothing that Miller could do because he missed the deadline. And Miller said, I've retained legal counsel. This wasn't my error. It was theirs. I asked them what they would do to fix it, and they told me they would check with the state and get back to me. Miller said the six-day calendar deadline passed while he was waiting on an answer. So there's a lot of discrepancies. Usually, of course, I mean, we have to state the simple facts. There's almost no vote fraud in the United States, but there are errors. Miscounting. I mean, I've read all kinds of stories about little errors that certain districts didn't get counted. And I still don't know why so many precincts in Detroit weren't fully counted in the absentee ballots until over a week later. I don't understand that. And again, the votes are still, maybe they're all counted in Michigan, sort of, but, you know, we've got discrepancies here and there. We need a better system nationwide for voting, and one that is able to be legitimized easily, and so that recounts don't cost a lot of money. I think, it would take one of the candidates to ask for the recall, but I don't think it has to be among the two candidates. I don't see that myself. I'm not the lawyer, though, but I don't think anywhere in the law it says it has to be just the two that are in contention. If there's more than two candidates. John, I don't know if you saw, and I don't know if I can fully explain it today, and we don't have time either, but in the state of Maine, there was actually a ballot proposal passed that changed the way that, but not for the presidential ballots once every 4 years, but for all state offices, if there's four candidates running, it's called instant runoff. That's one name for it. Instant runoff voting. Okay. So you vote for the four candidates in the order that you like them. So you vote for which candidate you want most to win. You vote for the second candidate you want to win, and the third and the fourth. Okay. If you want to go that far. Okay. If no candidate has a majority, because they're looking for somebody getting elected with a majority of support of some kind, not with a minority of support. Right. And unfortunately, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, nationwide, they still, neither one of them has majority support of the voters in this country. Yep. I hate to point that out. True. But if a majority means anything, not just a plurality, which means, well, you got the most. Yeah, you got 20%. That was the most in a field of 8 or 20 people or whatever. And is that really the will of the people expressed there? So Maine, which is a very democratic state in many ways, you know, an old-style northeastern farmer independent mentality. I don't know. You have to be there and talk to some people from Maine to understand this. But they passed it, I think, because they thought, well, this will guarantee that at least a majority of support will be in the elected candidate. So here's how it works, as I understand it briefly. And yes, I think it's something Michigan should do, but it's hard to explain. Okay, so let's say the top candidate didn't get the majority out of the four candidates. Well, then they look at the candidate number four, and they redistribute the votes from that candidate for the second on those ballots, the second and third choices that the people made, and they give those votes to the three candidates left, and they see if a majority happened. It didn't go that way. Then they would go to the third most voted for candidate, and they would take those ballots and look at them and distribute the number two and number three and votes from them, not the fourth, of course, that's already been eliminated, to the candidates left.
So they're weighing the numbers against each other to have.
So it would be the person who gets the majority is the person who has, yes, your first choice, but also the most second and maybe even some third choices. But they will have votes from a larger group of people than just the people that vote for them. Mm-hmm. These other people that think, well, they're not my top choice, but they're my second choice.
Yeah,
and second choice is not too bad out of four. I mean, obviously, there's two people that you don't want. So instant runoff. And by the way, that will avoid the need for primaries. Saving
lots of money
on elections.
Yeah.
Okay. Of course, the ballot will get a lot larger because you have more candidates for every office if you don't have a primary to reduce it down to the top two. But, primaries, that's a problem with primaries because we had how many candidates running for 15th district rep.
Right.
I know it was Democratic side and Republicans. The Republican side had at least three or four candidates, and the Democrats had a few, didn't they? It was more than just Hamoud there on the Democratic side.
I thought there were more than four.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, I'm just saying instant runoff is a great idea. I think it's very Democratic. It's a little hard to explain to people, but it does mean that people that have support as their number one choice and their number two choice together will be the ones that will finally be in office. Mm-hmm. And of course, that might mean that the person who got the most votes for the number one choice won't be the one that gets elected, though. It'll be the person that has the most support of number one voters and number two choice voters.
I gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's, obviously any system will not vote to change because the people, very, very easily, because the people in office got elected by the present system.
They want to keep their jobs.
They want to keep the system that got them elected, and they figure worked out really well. Anybody that didn't get elected, like the Democrats, or Green Party, or whatever, they would like to see changes. And unfortunately, the simple fact is, folks, is that these changes would help democracy. It would actually help build consensus. And so I personally am not against that idea at all, anything that's better for democracy. So there's a lot of proposals like that. Just thought I'd toss that one out. Okay, well, we have only about 10 minutes before Highway 61, The Best in the Blues with Kitty Love comes up. John, go ahead.
Yeah, Maine is a huge state, and it's... Besides,
not that many people, though.
No, not that many people, but the southern part of the state is completely dependent on tourism. Versus farming in the rest of the part of the state, or some fishing.
The fishing industry is not what it used to be.
No,
yeah.
No.
They actually are following careful guidelines on the fishing industry so that they don't overfish.
Yes.
And therefore end all life as we know it in the ocean. So they obviously can't do unlimited fishing anymore like they did in the past.
Yep.
I was in Portland last year did had some fish, although I was a little hesitant because I didn't want to overeat, and overfish
that population
leave it swimming around somewhere. Portland and Maine, it's a beautiful state. I know you've been there too, and they have some interesting ideas about democracy. They just elected Democratic senator. That was a very close race. It took them like 2 or 3 weeks to count all the votes there, and then there are not as many votes as in Michigan, and it was a very small figure there. They do have a Republican governor who is a real loose cannon. I can see, he has made the most crazy statements. He's almost got censored even by Republicans and Democrats in the legislature. They don't really know what to do with him. He's just saying, I don't want to go into it, but it, you know, that's politics, okay? And there's problems no matter with people. It's still people, you know, it's not just political parties.
Right.
It takes constant vigilance. And so I have to say, I was very concerned. I hope it was a mistake. I have to say that this last Wednesday, I subscribed to the Dearborn Press and Guide. And this last Wednesday, I got Wednesday's News Herald. Okay, it doesn't say Press and Guide at the top. It doesn't say Dearborn Press and Guide or even Dearborn Heights Press and Guide. So did I get the wrong paper? This paper doesn't cover Dearborn at all, except sometimes a little bit incidentally. It's a downriver paper that John normally sees.
I do.
Yeah, and it has a great editorial in there by Craig Ferrand about the state of education in Michigan. And, of course, you can read this, even if you're from Dearborn, on their website, the News Herald. I think it's, no hyphen, thenewsherald.com. And click on Opinions. And read Craig's very complete and extensive opinion. That's one reason I like opinions, if they have a lot of facts, if they are well argued, okay? Even if you disagree with some or many of the facts, you need to challenge yourself and read through that. He's always intelligent, of course, former managing editor of the whole Times Herald, of the News Herald newspapers. So he knows about newspapers. And yes, he has been on the show, and we should invite him back, but he has so many opinions. Oh, my gosh. Okay, traditionally liberal, you know. My opinions sometimes are a little bit, some people might say erratic, because sometimes I'm a libertarian conservative. Other times I'm a progressive. Other times I'm, not too often middle of the road, but sometimes, yeah. All right. What else we got, John? I've got a couple other things from Metro Times, but you have something else you want to add? There's some special events.
Yeah.
Usually in the last 5 minutes, we should mention some of those.
Okay. Tonight on Gross Eel, we are having our Island Glow to kick off the Christmas season, where we have musical groups singing and special sales of holiday goods and a procession down to the Christmas tree where it's lit in the middle of town, and it's always a nice night. Lots of entertainment to be had. We also have tonight at Joe's Top Dog in Dearborn, Dave Tatro, the trumpet player, is going to be there with accompanying Rich Michaels' trio. Should be a good night for that. I wanted to make mention of the Henry Ford College Chorus, Blue Fusion and Renaissance Voices will combine their talents and perform the Winter Choral Concert at 4 p.m. December 4th at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Dearborn. And Renaissance Voices also will perform later in December, December 18th, at Christ Episcopal Church on Military Street in Dearborn.
And, of course, we mentioned last week, but Monday is Dearborn's Christmas tree lighting and sing-along, Monday, December 5th, starting at 6 o'clock indoors at the Michael A. Guido Theater, part of the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, Michigan Avenue, just east of Greenfield. And it's a free event, longstanding Dearborn tradition. Starts with that Youth Symphony String Quartet in the lobby of the Michael A. Guido Theater, and at 6:40 p.m., sharp, not 6:41, not 6:39. The festivities will move outside the building's west entrance for the ceremonial lighting of the city Christmas tree by Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. And everyone is invited, and they'll be singing outside too, I think. No, then they're invited back in. So they're expecting, I guess, really bad weather. They're going to light the tree and then run back in. And then they're going to have singing inside.
Nice.
So there you go. Following the sing-on, it will be cookies, coffee, and hot chocolate in the lobby. And Santa Claus, and this is the second one I printed out, and it's still C-L-A-U-S-E.
Uh-huh.
So, he's not a fragment. He's a clause. Okay.
We're not talking about Tim Allen, are we?
No. Okay. Not that clause. Okay. Nor Bad Santa. No.
Bad Santa.
Right.
I've got one here.
Go ahead.
We have a Secret Santa Dash run walk, 5K run walk to benefit Mimi's Mission. This is also on December 4th, 9 a.m. at the Centennial Farm on Grosse Isle. This is a mission to a community-based nonprofit organization that assists downriver residents in need throughout the year. The foundation is hosting this at 9 a.m. with a variety of activities of all ages to follow. River Q Bakery and S&J Cupcakery of Flat Rock. The two businesses are donating holiday-inspired baked goods for children and adults to enjoy while taking this opportunity.
That's great. I just want to mention in sort of a segue from the last story about the sing-along outside and how they're just going to go out to light the tree and then run back inside so nobody gets cold or something. A great story. In fact, there's three or four great stories in the free Metro Times just out this last Wednesday. It's becoming one of the best investigative reporting and opinion papers published in the Detroit area. And again, like Arab American News, it's free. How do they do that? Well, they have a lot of ads that you don't have to read. But and because the news part of it is only like maybe 10 pages out of like 50 or 60 pages in the tabloid, so it's not primarily news. It's the so-called entertainment tabloid weekly in Detroit. That's where they make their money for. But wow, the quality of the reporters. One of the stories you should look at is the story, How Climate Change is Shaping Michigan. Have you noticed? It's been a warmer fall. And now approaching, officially winter and on December 22nd, than ever. And it's already going to be, even averaging in relatively cool days for the rest of the month, the hottest day in the history, the recorded history of the world. Oh. The hottest, not day, year.
Year.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Some people like it warmer. Okay. I don't know what people are, worried about for the tree lighting ceremony, because it's pretty warm almost every day. It's warm. It drops into the 30s at night, but how often has it been freezing so far this year? And it's December 2nd. Once. And Kitty Love is still picking things out of her garden, I think. So she's still getting peppers or something.
Green onions
are still coming up, see? So... still a chance for that until it really freezes cold. Well, of course, there's a cover story in the Press and Guide, which goes on 8 pages. I printed it out, but I haven't read it yet. It's too long. But what President Donald Trump could mean for the looming climate change crisis. But then there's this other story about just climate change in Michigan. And, of course, the effects of climate change vary by state. In Michigan, the trend is for the weather to become both warmer and wetter, too. So... get out your boots and your raincoat. Precipitation in the Midwest has seen more extreme change with a 10 to 15% increase since the 1930s. And especially upper Michigan, too. Also in the Great Lakes, a combination of higher temperatures and more rainfall led to an increase in microcystin, a toxic blue-green algae bloom that caused a 3-day water ban in southeast Michigan and Toledo in 2014. So that's going to be continuing, they think, in the future. So read that story. It's right on top of what was not mentioned at all in any presidential debates, which is climate change. And there's plenty of evidence it's happening. So we got to pack up. We got to get out of here. Time for the blues. Oh, that is the blues. We just did the blues this last hour. But the musical blues is coming
blues,
up now. Yeah. Yes. So thank you, John.
You're welcome,
Jay. Have a good weekend.
Good to be
thank
here.
You
yep.
to the papers, what's left of them, especially the Arab American News, MichiganRadio.com, WDET, and...
Metro Times.
Metro Times, of course. Yes. And we'll be back again next week. This is WHFR Dearborn. Now it's time for Highway 61.